Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
It is the first Thursday in 2017, January 5th, 2017, and we are back off a two-week hiatus, and we are so happy to be back in the studio. You are listening to LA Talk Radio. This is the Writer's Block. My name is Jim Christina, your host, in studio with my co-host, Bobby Jean Bell, and her husband, Jim, actually is her chauffeur.
Yes.
And
more.
And he sits over there and he laughs frivolously, you know, from him. So, welcome to 2017. Happy New Year, everybody.
Happy New Year. Great to be back in the saddle tonight.
Oh, my gosh. Isn't it great?
Yes.
I was just kind of chomping at the bit last week thinking, oh, man, I really should be in the studio. But I kind of worked it out. You know, you have another glass of Crown Royal. Yeah, everything kind of goes away.
Did you do some good reading over the break?
I did. I read our tonight's guest book.
Yes.
And I started in next week's guest book.
Gary Williams.
And I've been reading. What was our last guest?
Michael Sparkle.
Paul.
Oh, Paul Marks.
Paul Marks.
Paul Marks.
The book that you read.
Yes.
The big one.
White Heat. White Heat.
Yeah, I'm about three quarters of the way through that. That's really grabbed me. That has really grabbed me. That's a good book. It's a fun book. So anyway, we're sad to announce, of course, that everybody already knows that we lost Carrie Fisher, and then the next day we lost Debbie Reynolds, and our heart goes out to their families. But other than that, we're here, and we're working on 2 years now, so we're pretty stoked.
I know.
I can't believe it.
It just flies by. We're having so much fun.
I know, huh? And then Bobby Jean, she's working on the Santa Clarita Cowboy Festival
yes.
now. She's got all that stuff going on.
Yes.
So, Henry, hang on just a second. He's calling in right now. Let me. Henry, are you there? Henry?
Here.
Okay. Hey. Hi, Henry.
Here. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, guys. How are you doing?
And we got Michael Druxman on the other side. You want to say hi?
I sure do. Michael, how are you?
Here, let me merge him.
Okay.
Okay, you should be merged now.
Well, hello, Michael. How are you?
No, you should be. Well, let's try this again. Merge calls.
We haven't been here for 2 weeks, so.
Resume. Okay, here we go. Resume call. And merge calls.
Oh. Hey, Henry, they announced the Western Walk of Stars honorees this year. Did you see that on the festival website?
No, I haven't. Who's it going to be?
I have a scoop for you? Wow.
Uh-huh. You sure do.
Well, let's get our ads out of the way, and then, Henry, we're going to give you the radio. Okay.
All right.
The Writer's Block is brought to you by Black Dog Publishing in Simi Valley. That I spoke to Black Dog can help you if you're a new writer, kind of work your way through the system. Their number is 805-795-3165, and by Out West Boutique and...
Out West Boutique at www.scvoutwest.com.
There you go. And your phone?
661-347-9700.
All righty. And they got the biggest... I got everything.
We got everything.
They got everything. So, and by Target Freight Management. And we've mentioned them every week because they're just great folks. We always mention that they have full truckload service. That's the best in the industry. But if we mention that TFM Truckload is the finest in the industry, we're barefoot. So... they get their freight there every time on time and at the rates you need for your transportation costs. Call Target today, 844-653-7789. Sorry, Mike. And tell them you heard it on the Writer's Block, and they'll have a little something extra for you. And while we're at it, if you're an LTL shipper, you are probably looking for the best rates. So call Target Freight Management. Their customized transportation management system is just a ticket to getting your freight moved your way. Call Target Freight Management today at 888-653-1323 or go to www.target.com. WFMI.com. You will not be sorry. We guarantee it. On the line with us right now, we have Mr. Henry Park. So let's welcome Henry to the Writer's Block.
Whoa.
Standing room only in the studio.
Finally, the reception I've been hoping for.
Well, you know, it's the one you earned.
You get it here.
And I got to say, I'm so pleased that you're going to have Michael Druxman as your guest tonight.
Yes.
Because he is such a talented guy. He wrote what I think is one of the absolute best indie westerns of all time, Cheyenne Warrior.
Yes, we were just talking about that, actually.
A cult following. Have you folks seen that yet?
I have just bought a copy, Henry, to be honest. And it just got here yesterday. I'm going to be viewing it this Saturday evening.
It's great stuff. Kelly Preston, Pat O'Hoffman, Bo Hopkins, and Dan Haggerty has what I think is probably his best non-Grizzly Adams role in that.
Is that right?
Yeah, really good stuff.
Well, good.
And I'm so excited. I'm going to be with you guys in April at the Santa Clarita Cowboy Festival.
Yes, you are.
Yes, you will.
Yes, and I'm sorry, Bobby Jean, you were going to tell me who were going to be the honorees on the Walk of Western Fame.
Well, one of them you actually just mentioned, Bo Hopkins.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, and the other is the Valuze brothers of Melody Ranch Film Studio are being honored for all of the years that they've supported the Cowboy Festival when it was at Melody Ranch. So they will be honored on the Thursday night, I believe, of festival. That is, will be April 20th. And you can get the whole scoop on the Cowboy Festival very simple at cowboyfestival.org. We'll take you right to this website for everything you need to know about the festival.
That's terrific. Oh, and the Valuze family is definitely very deserving of that honor. And they've been great.
Absolutely. Yep.
Yeah. Well, yep. Well, I just got to see the first two episodes of The Sun, the upcoming new Western series from AMC that stars Pierce Brosnan. A patriarch of a Texas oil family. And so far it is terrific stuff.
Really?
I was very impressed. It's going to be starting running sometime this spring, and just, you know, something so good to look forward to. And the coming roundup, I'll be reviewing a new Western that's available on DVD and streaming on Amazon and elsewhere, Boonville Redemption. It stars a very talented young gal named Emily Hoffman, Pat Boone, Diane Ladd, Ed Asner, and in keeping with full disclosure, me. I have a very dramatic scene with Pat Boone.
Oh, wow.
Well, actually, he gets to be very dramatic, and I get to walk by in the background carrying lumber because I'm a dress extra in it. But it's really a very interesting story. It's set in Boonville, California, and much of it centers around this quirky local language called Boontling, which is a real thing. It was created there about a century and a half ago and spoken by just a handful of people now.
Interesting.
Yeah.
All right.
It's very interesting stuff. And I'm going to be giving readers a preview of the upcoming Brian LaBelle Old West auctions. Have you ever seen any of those?
Mm-mm.
No, I read a lot about them, but I've not seen one.
Well, it's great stuff, and the auction actually is on January 21st in Mesa, Arizona. Mm-hmm. They always have wonderful posters, paintings, cowboy art, mm-hmm. American Indian art, guns, saddles, Edward Boland, silver. Now, among the historic items is a Sharps rifle, scientifically, I am told, proven to have been used by an Indian at the Little Bighorn.
Oh, wow. Oh, is that right?
Wow.
Yeah, they expect somewhere from $300,000 to $500,000 for that.
Huh.
And there are costumes, items from John Wayne, Buck Jones, Gene Autry, Roy Rogers' watch, Tom Mix's chaps, letters written by Buffalo Bill Cody, and a gold watch given by Will Rogers to Charlie Russell.
Oh, wow.
Just amazing
That's
stuff.
Special.
I'll be telling about upcoming events at the Autry, including a rare big screen showing of Sam Peckinpah's The Ballad of Cable Hogue.
Love that movie.
And isn't that great? I've never seen it on a screen.
Really?
Only on the little tube.
Oh, love it. Great movie.
Oh, and Rob, I'm sorry.
Oh, it's great. It's just a great movie.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and Rob Word's long-running interview series there, A Word on Westerns, this time is going to focus on Western bad guys. He always gets great guests, so that should be a lot of fun. And I'll be reviewing a new release from Alpha Video, an early talkie called His First Command, And any Hopalong Cassidy fans will get a big kick out of this because it stars William Boyd before he became Hoppy.
Pre-Hoppy.
Pre-Hoppy.
He's playing a spoiled playboy, which is as far from Hoppy as you can imagine, who joins the cavalry to impress his girl, Dorothy Sebastian. Oh, and I guess he must have actually impressed her for real because they really got married. It didn't last too long, but they were married for like 4 or 5 years.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Henry, but wasn't he like in his mid to late 40s when he picked up the Hoppy role?
I think probably mid-40s.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was in 35. It was a very strange thing. Do you know about the big scandal that he was an innocent victim of?
Yes. Yeah, I actually read his biography.
It was a very strange thing. Another actor, also named William Boyd.
William Boyd, right.
Was arrested at a brothel.
Right.
And the newspapers ran the story and ran the blonde William Boyd's picture.
Right.
And that was it. Nobody, you know, even though everyone in the business knew it wasn't him, he did not get any work to speak of for about 4 years. And then he was approached with the Hoppy role. And as you say, he was kind of old to start picking it up, but
right.
Sure did a beautiful job.
Yeah, I mean, he was everybody's hero in the 40s and the 50s and late 30s.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
And the movies really hold up. The TV shows really date badly, oddly enough. They're kind of hard to get through. But the movies really stand up very well.
Yeah, they just had a great cast in those movies.
Oh, yeah. Of course, Gabby Hayes to start. And, what's his name from Gone with the Wind? Scarlett O'Hara's first husband.
Oh, yes.
Rand Brooks, right.
Mm-hmm.
Rand Brooks. And there's lots of great supporting people. Robert Mitchum.
Yeah, Russell Hayden.
Did 3 or 4 of them. Hoppy Serves a Writ, I remember he's in.
Yeah, California. What's his name? California Carlson?
Who was it?
I don't remember who actually was that played him, but yeah.
I never knew, so.
Andy.
I can't help
Andy
you.
Clyde. There you go.
But anyhow, so that's what I got coming up. Oh, and please pick up the January True West, featuring my Best of the West movies, TV, and video picks for the year. And, you know, you can find all about this and more at www.henryswesternroundup.blogspot.com.
Yay, Henry, you got all the way through it.
It's always good to have you with us, Henry.
Henry, we'll
Thank
be
you
talk,
so much.
Talking to you in a couple of weeks. Take care, my friend.
You too. Take care.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, his talking about William Boyd and what happened to him is a perfect connection to our guest tonight.
It is.
Because it's, you know, about scandal in Hollywood in the heyday of Hollywood.
It is. Are you still with us?
Yes. I was wondering what happened to you.
Okay. Our guest tonight, I'm excited to talk. I talked with this gentleman on Monday and we had quite the conversation. His name is Michael Druxman and he is a screenwriter, a playwright, he writes screenplays,
songs.
He writes songs, he writes books, he writes biographies. If it's got something to do with the written word, Michael Druxman has done it. I'm not going to go through his entire portfolio.
We wouldn't have any time to talk to him.
Suffice it to say, he is from Seattle, Washington. He graduated from Seattle, Washington, Queen Anne Hill. And
Garfield High School.
Capitol Hill. I'm sorry.
On Capitol, that's better.
Forgive me. Yeah, you were up in the highbrow area. Michael spent 35 years in Hollywood and 45 and got the hell out when the getting was good. He now resides with his wife in Austin, Texas. And would you please welcome to the writer's block, Mr. Michael Druxman. Welcome, Michael.
Welcome.
Here, let me give you the clap.
Yeah. We're very irreverent here.
We are irreverent as hell here. We give everybody the clap. What the
I don't need a shot now, right?
Yeah, no, you're good. You're good. How you doing, pal?
I'm fine.
Well, we're so happy to have you kicking off our year with us.
Oh my gosh.
This year.
Yeah, last year we had Craig Johnson.
Craig Johnson.
This year we've got Michael Druxman.
Yep.
It doesn't get any better than that.
I mean, the whole rest of the year, we're starting with with the bar held really high.
Yeah, now we coast for the rest of the year.
Yeah, so we both read Murder in Babylon.
Right.
And couldn't put it down.
I'm glad.
Yeah, what a wonderful romp. Why don't you just tell us a little bit about that book and how it came to be?
Well, it started back, I guess the seed was planted back when I was about 5 years old, and I saw a movie with Mabel Normand, a silent movie with Mabel Normand. And I remember my mother telling me that she had, we're talking about the mid-40s now, that she had been involved in some murder case. Okay, now go forward to the the late 1970s, and I'd written several books about Hollywood, all nonfiction. I wanted to do something a little different. They were biographies, they were books on movie remakes and sequels and musicals. And I said, true crime books were very popular at the time, so I was looking for something about true crime in Hollywood. And I came across the William Desmond Taylor murder.
Mm-hmm.
And, it rang a bell from way back, about the Mabel Normand thing. And I just became fascinated with the case. And luckily, a lot of people who were there were still alive. I interviewed, and she was a major help, Adela Rogers St. John's. And King Vidor went to his house. And King Vidor was the only outsider who actually saw the police files. And I also interviewed on the phone Mary Miles Minter, who was one of the key players in the case.
And that's amazing that you interviewed her. Yeah,
it was a phone interview.
Yeah.
And of course she wouldn't admit to anything.
Well.
And something happened and I sort of abandoned the project. I think I got a job. I was doing this on spec, and I got a contract to write a book about Merv Griffin, and I got Merv to cooperate with me, and he loved the book. He put me on the show and all that, and then another book came up, and then in the early 80s, I think, a book came out, A Cast of Killers,
right,
about the William Desmond Taylor case, which was a very good book.
Yes, it was.
And pardon me. So I forgot about it because other things were happening. And I literally totally forgot I'd written the book. So about 2-3 years ago, I was going to, I was cleaning out my storage space, and I came across this manuscript. And I'd forgotten I'd written it. And I read it, and I said, hey, this isn't bad.
Yeah.
And, and by this time, Mary Miles Minter, of course, had died. And so I did a little bit of updating, and it came out, and it's out on in paperback, it's out on Kindle, and it's Fred Freeze has done an audiobook of it.
And it is a fast romp, and it is so dense with, the cast of characters.
So many people.
So many witnesses, one of the heart, how in the world did you organize, or do you remember how you went through the writing process?
I had virtually every newspaper story or everything ever written during that period of time. And, the whole, everything about the case itself is absolutely true. Every witness, the only thing that's fiction in the book is the newspaper man and the cop.
Mm-hmm. And he's the wonderful. We really like him.
Yeah.
Ben.
Yeah. And, I needed a point of view. And I think the problem with, from my point of view, that the other books on the case have is that there's no real point of view.
Uh-huh.
And so that's why I did this. But like I say, everything about the case itself is absolutely true.
Yeah. Now, we had talked on, as I may have mentioned on the air earlier, that we had, you and I had talked on Monday. And and we mentioned King Vidor, and that the book, Cast of Killers, was actually written from his notes and the stuff that he had garnered.
Right.
And I think
Well, he had asked me, he said, do you want to this is a schmucky thing for me not to do, but he said, well, why don't we collaborate? And I had been working very closely with Adela Rogers St. John, and I said, well, let me think about it. And she said to me, what do you need him for? You know who did it. And it was a stupid mistake, because the Cast of Killers could have been my book.
Yeah, as it was, his publicist finished it, I think.
I don't know. It was somebody, after he died. Yeah, he according to what I understand, he found all his notes in the... In his garage. That's where his office was.
Right.
In his garage.
And you know, your book, The Murder in Babylon, is so fun to read, because you have so many people in and out, and it's like the cops are so lackadaisical in what they want to do. It's almost like it's Hollywood. So what?
Well. Yeah, and the for those of who haven't had the chance to read this book yet, it starts really on February 1st, 1922,
right.
Or the day before,
right.
Our main character is shot. And when his body is discovered on, I guess, the morning of February 1st.
February 2nd.
They're already like going through
dresser drawers
and pulling out stuff. Like, you know, today that would never be, be allowed.
The part that killed me is the coroner sits there and rolls the body.
Well, yeah,
he's been shot.
First,
they thought he had a heart attack.
Yeah. But of course, it's 1922. So you also take us through this really wonderful. Kind of pop culture of the time period.
Right.
We're in the Roaring Twenties. We got blackmail gangs. Who ever heard of blackmail? I always think of blackmail as like a single person blackmailing.
Yeah, yeah.
We got opium. We've got drug addictions.
Shootout that I describe. You know, I stick the reporter
shootout.
In the middle of it.
Yeah.
That actually happened.
Oh, it did?
Yeah.
That actually happened. Yeah. Everything, and the meeting at the Beverly Hills Hotel where he listens, that's true.
And that's true, too.
You know, I just stick him into it. That's all.
Well, King Vidor knew William Desmond Taylor, didn't he?
Yes. Yes, and so did...
He was a young actor at the time,
Adela,
I think,
wasn't he? Roger St. John.
Yeah. You know, the characters that you have in your book, I mean, they're so numerous.
Yeah,
but if you read it like I read it, you keep going back to the one obvious person. And there was only one person that could have done the murder.
You think so?
We don't want to say that on the radio.
Well, you want to read the book.
No, we don't want to
read, the book. But I think Michael and I agree on to who it was.
I'm not sure.
Yes.
And I mean, I just blurted it out on Monday, and he goes, yeah, that's it.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think there's a couple other books out that point to somebody else. But I think, you know, the person is so, you know, there's no question in my mind.
Right.
That, you know, but these other books that came out earlier, mind you have to, you know, they don't want to have the same old.
Right. Evidence was taken
else.
And things.
Sure.
I mean, part of it was you kind of lead us to believe that you do give us an idea of who you think it is, but there wouldn't have been enough to hold up in court.
No,
pieces
I
of
think,
evidence
especially now,
and you know, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
You know. It's, when the case, you know, the case went dormant for about 10 years.
Right.
And when they went back to, you know, when they went back to check on the evidence, a lot of the evidence had disappeared.
Right.
Because, you know, there was a lot of corruption in the L.A. government.
Oh, yes, there was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not
and,
anymore, though.
People got paid off, and
not anymore.
I don't know. I haven't lived there.
Oh my God! Well, you hear me over here chortling, so you know that's a bunch of crap.
I don't know that for a fact.
You know, if a certain party had kept their mouth shut, nobody would have looked at her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
looked
at this person to be the killer.
Right.
But it's so interesting that it continues this day to be one of the unsolved. And,
right.
and it it seems to also be one of the crimes that kind of sets Hollywood suddenly into a world of the sordid and the scandal. And I thought that was interesting. The Fatty Arbuckle situation was going on at the same time. And then
very shortly thereafter, the Wally Reed scandal.
Yeah,
you know, he died of drug overdose.
Right.
Right. And you bring in the Hayes. The Hayes office. Can you talk about that for just a moment? The Hayes office and what's
the Hayes office. You know, it's a censorship. You know, there were threats from the Congress that movies should be censored. These terrible things that were being shown in movies, and so the industry itself set up the Hayes office so that the government wouldn't get involved, and it really didn't get too effective until after Hayes left and other people took over in the early 30s. Mm-hmm. You know, they still were getting away with a lot of stuff under Hayes, but he was, I believe, the Postmaster General. I'm not sure.
Yes, I think that's what you say, that he had been the Postmaster General.
Yeah,
that was all very interesting because I didn't really know anything about that. And because the book reaches into the murder is still not solved 15 years or so later.
Right. Not officially,
you know,
solved.
You take
it's
us through
officially.
The Depression, you know, the stock market hits in 29.
Right.
And you really take us through a whole cultural landscape of what was going on.
Right. Well, if I'm not mistaken, I believe that's still the oldest unsolved murder in Los Angeles.
Well, certainly the most famous unsolved.
And, I think the murder of William Desmond Taylor probably is what brought out Hollywood and all the nastiness in Hollywood to the fore, rather than letting it stay back in the shadows.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, that's true. That's true. That and Arbuckle.
Yeah, Arbuckle started it, sure.
Now, he had been a well-known director. Do you think that if he had just lived a regular, you know, life and had, you know, lived to a ripe old age, that he would be remembered like he is today? Or
I think that, you know, he and DeMille were the two big directors of the day. But you look at his films, Taylor's films, there are none that are really remembered. I think his main claim to fame, he was murdered.
Yeah.
I think you'd never know the name if he hadn't been murdered.
And you know what's amazing is that we discussed this on Monday as well, is that William Desmond Taylor is a really cool name. But his real name was really cool, too. I mean, William Cunningham Dean Tanner.
He's in the crypt at Hollywood. Is it Hollywood?
Santa Monica.
He's right by Valentino.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In fact, I've visited the, you know, way back when I visited the crypt.
But his real name is really cool, too, so.
He's kind of a multi-layered, sort of shady character. We see him being written about as really a great guy, but you
well,
show,
he advised, he, you know, he deserted his wife back in New York and disappeared for a few years.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's got some shadiness there.
Yeah. And you wrote this book on a typewriter.
Yeah, that was the other thing that you mentioned when you find it years later that it was written on a typewriter.
Yeah, and with all those chicken, you know, chicken scratches. So I had to sit there, and you know, I typed the thing, you know, on my computer, and you know, there was another book that was in the same box, which I remembered, but you know, there were other reasons why. It was my Dinah Shore biography, and I pulled it out. And it hadn't come up because way back when I'd written about the same time I wrote it right after the Merv Griffin book, and there was a legal dispute between the paperback and hardback publisher, and by the time it got settled and I got the rights to the book back, another book on Dinah Shore had come out, and so I just forgot about it, and so this was. You know, I found this at the same time as I found the William Desmond Taylor book, and I called my publisher and I said, "Would you be interested?" And he said, "Oh, absolutely." And I said, "All right, well, if I get around to it, because I'd have to retype the whole thing, and I didn't really feel like doing it." And he says, no, I'll pay for it. I'll pay for that. I want to do this book." So I sent it to his typist, and they. And, you know, I updated it because she had passed since I wrote it.
Right.
And I got, you know, it's one of my best, all-time best-selling books is Miss Dinosaur.
Well, it was my understanding that she was, like, very reticent to talk about her youth or her upbringing or her family.
You know, Merv was so cooperative. He put me together. He put me in contact with his friends. He, you know, I went over to, you know, met with his former wife. She fixed me lunch. You know, he was wonderful. With Dinah, nothing. And I went to Tennessee, where she was born, Winchester, Tennessee. I went to New York. And a few people, you know, would talk to me, but she wouldn't talk to me. Nobody who was close to her would talk to me, you know, on the show. I remember I interviewed Harry Von Zell, you know, who had worked with her, and a few other people. But, and yet it's my, you know, it's really probably my best-selling book of all time.
Should have talked to George Montgomery. He probably had a mouthful.
Yeah. What?
Should have talked to George Montgomery. He probably had a mouthful.
Oh, I did talk to him.
Oh, did you?
Oh, I did very, very briefly. He said, well, you don't mind me sue you, do you?
So much for that.
So I'm going to ask a question now, just to segue a bit about the writing process, because most of your books, it looks like they've been published by Bear Manor Media, who do a lot of publishing on Hollywood and entertainment books. How did you, may I ask, how did you find them, or did they find you, or...
My early books had been published by other, A.S. Barnes and Company, which is now out of business, you know, not because of my books, but they went out of business. And, what the hell's the name of the publisher? Another publisher. And then I said, how did I approach them? It was my first my first autobiography. I've written two autobiographies, and you know, they said, yeah, we'd be interested. Somebody told me about them, and mm-hmm. you know, I looked at one of their books and called. You know, I emailed them, and they said, yeah, we would be interested. And I got two books coming out from them this year.
It's so great that they seem to handle so many of these kinds of titles. I'm familiar with them a little bit through Antoinette Lane, who wrote a book on Guy Williams, and that was one of the first books that I ever read that was published by Bear Manor Media. It's so fun to go to their website and just see the plethora of fabulous books about,
and they,
you know,
they do fiction too.
Yeah,
you know,
and they do
written,
fiction too.
They've,
mm-hmm.
My, you know, this, my Dracula meets Jack the Ripper. You know, my book of short stories that did that, and I've got another novel coming out with them. pardon me, this year, as well as another movie book. You know, movie.
So how many books do you write how many books do you write a year?
I bet he doesn't even know.
I don't know. You know, I'm working on a new play. You know, I have a series of plays called The Hollywood Legends.
Right.
Which have been, you know, a lot have been done around the country. A couple are available on audio. And those I published myself through CreateSpace.
Yeah. It's a good platform, actually.
Yeah, I love working with CreateSpace, and you know, I'm a publicist. I was a publicist for 30 some odd years in Hollywood, and I know how to promote the books, and they sell very well, the plays, extremely well. You know, I was told by one person that I sell a lot of them in schools because the students, you know, have to get up in class and they have to give a monologue. And, you know, nine of these plays are one-person plays.
You have another book that has wonderful reviews called The Art of Storytelling. And since this is a show devoted to honoring the written word, I thought maybe we should have you just talk a little bit about that book. I bet we've got lots of writers and readers that would love to read that book.
Well, this is a book I wrote, I don't know what the copyright is on it, but, you know, it's way back when. I was teaching a course in Los Angeles. I taught some writing courses, and I'm trying to remember the name of the... It's a night school, and, you know, they're in the valley. They have one in Thousand Oaks. And I taught this course on storytelling. And essentially, this is what I taught. You know, I put it all in book form. And, you know, it talks about climax and dialogue story structure, which is, you know, the most important thing.
Mm-hmm.
And gives examples. There are exercises in there that one can do. It's like you're taking my class.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about a few things about how your day goes when you are writing. Where do you like to write the best? Where the most?
Where? In my office, where I'm sitting right now.
Oh, is that okay?
Yeah, and I, pardon me. I usually I do most of my writing in the morning. And then for the rest of the day, I just think about what I'm going to write next, and then I'll go back. And sometimes I don't write anything new. I just go back and correct things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I essentially write by the seat of my pants. I have an idea how I'm going to begin it. I have an idea how I'm going to end it, but I'm not always sure how I'm going to get there.
That's my hand is up because that's uh-huh. exactly what I do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
sometimes I get stuck. This last novel I had coming out, I started, a long time ago, I started it as a screenplay, and then I decided to make it into a novel, and it took me 2-3 years. You know, it was just sat there for a long time because I didn't know how I was going to end it, and then I got this idea, and I finished it, you know, relatively quickly.
So do you work on multiple projects at a time, or do you find that, you know, you start something and you have to see it to the end, or
once I I try to see a project to the end. Right now, the thing I'm writing right now is another play for the Hollywood Legend, my Hollywood Legends, a multiple character play, and I like writing those because, you know, I feel very comfortable on dialogue. I feel very comfortable on character. The hardest part for me is plotting. So I like to do these Hollywood Legends because I know how I know what the plot is going to be because they're all based on real people.
Yeah.
Right.
And
right.
Like the last one I wrote, I don't want to tell you what the current one is because until it's done. But the last one I wrote, and I wrote it in 2 weeks, which is the fastest I've ever written in it.
Wow.
And I think it's one of, it's called The Last Monsters.
Hmm.
And it's a 5-character play. And 3 of the characters are Bela Lugosi, Lon Chaney Jr., and John Carradine. And it takes place during the making, in 1956, during the making of a movie called The Black Sleep.
Oh, wow.
And
Courtney would love that.
All the basic events in it, you know, actually happened. But, you know, I just bring them to life.
Right. Mm-hmm. So,
and go ahead.
No, well, you were talking a bit ago about kind of getting stuck on something and you put it aside. So, how do you handle writer's block?
Here's the question.
There's our one question we make sure to ask every guest.
Ask everybody, and you would be surprised at the dichotomy of the answers
right.
we get.
So, share that with us.
I put it aside. I put it aside. Like this last novel that I wrote, that's coming out this year. I was stuck on how I put it aside for quite a while. You know, maybe 2-3 months, and it just hit me how I was going to end it.
Mm-hmm.
A movie that I'm credited with writing that came out back in the 90s. Dillinger and Capone, and if you see the movie, they what you see on the screen is basically, there were a lot of changes, and I was very unhappy with the finished product. It stars Martin Sheen and F. Mm-hmm. Murray Abraham.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But when I was writing the original script of that, I hit a block. And, it took me about 2 or 3 weeks to figure out what was wrong. And I realized I had violated the character of John Dillinger, because John Dillinger was a guy who would walk into a bank and say, "Stick him up, I'm John Dillinger. This is your lucky day, you're being robbed by John Dillinger." Well, in my original script, I had him go in and do a burglary, and that was not John Dillinger.
Mm-hmm.
So the minute I realized that I had, what I had done wrong, it just flowed.
Mm-hmm.
And then I sold the script, and God help it.
The rest is, as we say, history.
Yeah, there's really only one movie, one and a half movies that I've written that I'm proud of. One is Cheyenne Warrior, which I'm very proud of. pardon me, with one exception, they did everything that I wrote. And the other one was a movie I directed in Ireland with Roy Scheider called The Doorway. And I'm actually, that's a picture, that's a script I had to do the first draft in 1 week.
Mm.
I was given 1 week to write the first draft. It usually takes me about 6 weeks to write a good first draft, but when I do that, my first drafts are like 95% there.
Mm.
But this thing, I just had to rush. I had to put everything, the first thing that came in my mind, I had to put down because I was on a deadline. And after that, I had chances to rewrite it, but I was dealing with a faulty basis. So I think I'm more proud of my some of my directing touches in that than I am of the script. But,
mm-hmm.
So.
Well, you're such a prolific writer, Michael. I mean, you've
stories,
done everything.
Stories have to be just flooding your imagination all the time.
Do you sleep?
Oh yeah. At my age, it doesn't come as quickly as it used to,
or last as long.
There are two quotes that I found preparing for tonight of yours that I really like. One is, "Take all viable opportunities that come your way because you never know where they will lead." And I think that is
true.
A great creed to live by.
Mm-hmm.
And I also liked this. "After all, with due respect to action, directors, and other artists, isn't the only true creative aspect of the performing arts the written word? Everything else is interpretation."
Hey, that's pretty cool.
That?
Yeah,
apparently
you said
you
that.
Did.
Where did you come up with that? I think I did.
It's on your website.
I forgot to warn you. She digs deep.
Oh, wow.
I read and I do dig deep, yes.
And if you've ever been in jail, Bobby G knows about it.
You didn't find out about the blonde, did you? Don't
tell my wife. Oh, about the blonde. Well, I know there was something about a couple blonde hairs. Oh, no, that was in the book.
No, that was William Desmond Taylor.
So the next book that I know I really want to read of yours is Dracula Meets Jack the Ripper and Other Revisionist Stories. Tell us, with our last couple of minutes here, why don't you tell us a little bit about that book?
Well, it's a book of short stories. And four of them are sort of adaptations of screenplays, one of which is an adaptation of Dillinger and Capone, because after the movie came out, I was, that was going to be my big breakthrough thing, movie, because there was a lot of interest in it, but the first person to put up money was Roger Corman. But so I've came out with not only this version in Dracula, but I also published my original screenplay through Create Space. but there's like four stories of the six that are based on my screenplay, unsold screenplays, and two totally original stories. And I'm very proud. I think I'm more proud of this book than anything else I've ever written.
I know it's on my bucket list to get read this year between all the other things Bobby we have to read.
Bobby was telling me in the green room before the show that she wanted to read that book. Hey, look, we only got a couple minutes left, Michael. Why don't you give our audience your email and where they can find you in Facebook and all that good stuff?
Well, you can reach me at my website is Druxmanworks, Druxman Works, Works, .com, and you know I have a place where you can leave me, you know, send me an email through there. You can also reach me directly at Druxy, Druxy, at ix.netcom.com. And for any of you actors or directors out there, take a look at my, you know, there are right now 15 plays in the Hollywood Legends, and the advantage of doing them is you've got a pre-sold audience, whether you're doing a one-person play or, because all of the people that I write about in those plays are, you don't have to tell your audience who they are.
Yeah, that's amazing. And you're actually my new hero.
Well, thank you.
Sure. And I have to, I'll say this on the air, but I'll never give the number. I have your phone number.
Oh, no, don't do the Donald Trump thing.
Oh, no. No chance. Michael, thanks for joining us tonight. It's been a delight talking to you.
Okay, I enjoyed it.
Good. And are you a coffee drinker?
Yes, I am.
Okay, well, you'll be getting a Writer's Block coffee mug in the mail.
In the mail.
Well, thank you. You have my address.
I have your address, and I also have your phone number.
Okay.
Keep writing.
The William Cannon address.
Yeah, okay. Keep writing.
Keep writing. We'll keep reading.
Keep in touch with us. If you ever want to just call in and say hi, please feel free.
Okay, and say hello to Henry Park for me.
We'll do it. We'll do it.
Okay.
Thanks a lot, Michael.
Thank you.
Enjoy the rest of your evening.
Thank you. Well, I'm going to bed now. I'm 2 hours ahead of you.
Yeah, it's true. Okay, Mike, take care.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
That book was so great.
Michael Druxman,
such a romp through history, Hollywood.
He's just
history.
An amazing individual.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he is probably one of the most prolific writers we've ever had on this show.
I get this feeling that there are just things swirling around.
I know.
He just like goes, okay, plucks it out of the air and goes, okay, I'm working on that one.
Wouldn't you just love to be able to peek into his brain just for a second wouldn't do it. It would have to be like a day.
That's great. It was really
fun. Tell us about the Cowboy Festival coming up in April.
So Cowboy Festival kicks off April 19th in Santa Clarita with a concert that we will actually be sponsoring, an evening with Mary Kay, an award-winning singer-songwriter coming in from Utah and sharing the stage with one of our very, very favorite storytellers, Joe Harrington. And they will
be guests on the Writer's Block
the week before. Mm-hmm. Tickets for that actually are selling very quickly. It's a small house. Then the festival continues on Thursday with some events in Old Town New Hall. Friday is when all the vendors and everybody set up. There is a concert Friday night, I think, at Canyon Theater Guild and at The Rep. And then it all really happens on Saturday, April 22nd and 23rd. Sunday the 23rd. And you will find us as one of the many activities to check out, one of the major venue. We will be the Buckaroo Bookshop on the major grounds of the festival, which is held at the William S. Hart Park and Ranch in Old Town New Hall. We will be next to Hart Hall in a very generously sized 10 by 50 booth. We'll have about 16 authors with us. And then at the same time, this year for the first time, we have our own stage.
Yes.
The Out West stage. And we have scheduled 15 20-minute presentations each day. 20-minute sessions with live music, followed by 20 minutes with an author.
Mm-hmm.
And Jim will be conducting a couple of interviews. I'll be conducting one songwriter interview. We've got Henry Park talking to Courtney Joyner about how the West was weird.
I just can't imagine how that's going to be.
We have Cheryl Rogers Barnett, daughter of Roy and Dale, who on Saturday will do a 20-minute presentation on the triggers, because there actually was more than one.
Yes, there was.
And on Sunday, she'll talk about Roy and Dale as Hollywood royalty. We have a wonderful new author with us for a first time. Her name is Robin Hutton. She's written a fabulous book on a famous horse called Sergeant Reckless. And
the Marine horse,
yes,
right?
Yes. And she will be with us this year for a first time, and she will be doing a presentation on this amazing horse, both on Saturday and Sunday. So right. We've got Margaret Brownlee back with us, Janet Squires,
Richard Palinelli, Jeff MacArthur.
So you can find out all the information about what we're doing on the festival website, cowboyfestival.org. Then go to the page for venues and then click on Buckaroo Bookshop.
Right.
And you'll see a master list of all of our participants and links to the schedule that show you brief descriptions of the music and the author event. So we're very excited.
Yes.
That weekend.
Yeah, this is going to be a fun year.
It's going to be a really fun year.
It's going to be a fun year. And if you scroll down and you hit the name Nebo Kirschbaum, you've gone too far. So go back up. Next week on the Writer's Block, we have
Gary.
We have a writer that we met last year at the Cowboy Festival,
yes.
Gary Williams. And he has written a book. It's called Lessons from the Range. He is an absolute working cowboy. He goes out and he gets all the cattle from nobody wants to go after because they're way out there. And he's written just a fascinating book. And I'm about halfway through it now. I'll finish it by the time he's on next week.
He's a dog trainer.
And he also trains dogs.
Trains dogs, yeah.
And he's a really nice guy. We got to know him.
Last year he was with us.
And his wife is just a super, super sweet lady.
They had a great time.
And yes, they did. In fact, they stayed an extra day. They were going to leave, and they didn't.
That's right. They stayed an extra day. That's right.
They were right. I was right in between him and Dale Jackson, which... Oh, my God.
And Dale's back, of course. With
Dale's back again, of course.
And that's the whole reason we do
Eric and Al, the twins.
Is to have Dale back, you know.
Yeah, and the twins.
And the twins, yes.
Okay, that's it for tonight for us. Thank you so much. We are just delighted to be back in here at New Year's on 2017, January 5th, next week. Of course, that's Gary Williams. And we will be seeing you again next week, or at least talking to you again next week. And for us... Bobby Jean, Jim, me, good night, and this is LA Talk Radio.